You are listening to Midpoint on WMNF Radio 88.5 in West Central Florida. And welcome back, friends. This is your host, Shelley Reback, with the very last of my scripted shows for Midpoint. You may have heard that after almost 10 years as the host, I am moving on to pursue some other priorities. I will occasionally return as a substitute host, and you may hear me pitching for dollars in the future fund drives, because I will always hold a special place in my heart for WMNF, but I do have some other interests. I am first and foremost a talker and a writer, so over the last couple of years, I've combined those two attributes, and I've written my first full-length play, which I hope to see produced next year by a local theater company. I'm also very involved in voter protection efforts, and as we are moving into the midterm election season, my time will be devoted to that, too. I will miss all of you, but I'm excited for my new challenges, too. Next week, in honor of LGBTQA+ Pride Month, we will be broadcasting the recording of our Wavemakers Live event from back on April 8th when I interviewed author and historian Robert Fiesler about his award-winning book, American Scare, Florida's Hidden Cold War on Black and Queer Lives, about the history of the Florida Legislature's Johns Committee, which was our own mini McCarthyist House Un-American Activities Committee in the early 60s. It was a really interesting and informative presentation, and Bob is a very engaging speaker, so I think you will enjoy it, and you'll learn a lot about this shameful period in Florida's legislative history. Then for my last show, I think I will let you all program the show, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. We are your community radio station, and I always think it's important for the community to have a voice on this platform, too, especially right after you all have been so generous with us, with me, and with Midpoint by making donations during our pledge drive to secure WMNF's future. And then I'm out of here. So that's the plan for the rest of this month. I hope you will stick with me to the end. Now, meanwhile, today we have a really important show for you, as we will be examining the pros and cons of the upcoming property tax referendum that you will see on your ballot in November. Anders Croy of Florida Watch and DeSantis Watch, the Accountability Projects, will be with us via Zoom from his lair in Tallahassee, keeping watch over the legislature and the administration, to share his thoughts on the referendum. And I'm really happy to report that former Florida State Senator Jeff Brandis, now president of the Florida Policy Project, is also with us in the studio to talk about the property tax referendum, and I know he has a lot of thoughts about it. But before we get to that, I want to direct your attention to two other important local referenda that you will see on your ballot in November. But please note, my opinions on these issues are mine alone, and they don't represent the position of WMNF Radio, its board of directors, or my guests. First, there will be a Hillsborough County Charter Amendment proposed by local Republican County Commissioners Michael Owen and the traitorous Susan Valdez that seeks to expand the County Commission from 7 to 9 members and to transition all Commission seats to single-member districts representing specific, smaller geographic portions of the county. And this will eliminate the 3 current countywide at-large seats that every county voter can now vote for. This local charter amendment, if approved, also provides that if the county population exceeds 2.5 million, then the board would grow to 11 members. All right, let's talk about that. Eliminating the 3 at-large commission seats is the most controversial part of the proposal, because in the current at-large seat structure, county residents now get to vote in 4 commission races, giving them a voice on who serves in a majority of the commission seats. But under the new proposal, they would only have a say in picking 1 single commissioner, the one from their district. I don't know about you, but I like having a majority of the commission feeling somewhat responsible to me as a county voter, rather than having just the one single commissioner from my district listening to me, especially when the commission addresses so many county-wide issues that impact me and my pocketbook and the county resources that I enjoy. Like, for example, the question of whether and what county funds should or should not be used to pay for a new baseball stadium. That's a question, the answer to which will impact far beyond my home district. This legislation would make the county more susceptible to gerrymandering, too, allowing the party in power to cement their control over the board when they determine the shape of the districts, the single-member districts. So I'm not against expanding the commission, and I'm not against adding more single districts to accommodate the population growth. The county has grown enormously since 1985, when it was restructured to be like it is now. That was, of course, after five former commission members were indicted for corruption. But I see no reason to eliminate the countywide seats. The countywide commissioners have to take a broader countywide view of the questions and the policy proposals that come before the commission, because they have to be responsible to all county voters. This serves to balance both countywide and single-member district interests, just as it does at the federal level, where House representatives work for smaller areas while senators account for broader interests. Anyway, that's how I see it. What about you? All right, next, another local referendum question that you will see on your November ballot is whether the county school superintendent should be hired and appointed by the school board, as it is now, or should be elected by the voters. In my opinion, I think we need to keep a hired superintendent for the following reasons. Did you know that 48 out of 50 states use hired school superintendents? This includes all of Florida's largest school districts. They all hire their superintendents. They don't vote for them. Less than 1% of the county's 13,800 school districts elect their superintendents. And the hiring process, I feel, gets us the most qualified leadership. The school board conducts a national search for the most experienced and effective leader. They vet the candidates, and they only hire the best available person. But in an election, let's face it, any schmo can run, and often schmoes do run. The process becomes highly politicized, which doesn't serve the students of the district. Elections then turn into political campaigns. The candidates are more interested in raising campaign money and winning votes, while hiring focuses more on qualifications. Some people say that elections provide more accountability, but we do elect our school board members, and we elect them in nonpartisan races, and they are accountable to the voters. They can replace an ineffective superintendent, and they have in the past. If we had an elected superintendent, that wouldn't be the case. We are the seventh largest school district in America. We need an experienced, qualified education executive focused on students, education, and schools, not on political campaigns. So educate yourself, please, about these very important local issue ballot questions before November, because your vote is your voice, and it is important that you use it wisely. Now, I want to turn to our issue of the day, the property tax referendum. Let me introduce my guests. Coming to us through the Zoom from Tallahassee is Anders Croy. Anders Croy is the communications director for Florida Watch. That partners with Progress Florida to form the Florida Communications and Research Hub. Anders has been working in the Florida political process for more than a decade and has extensive experience in legislative policy. I want to welcome him back to Midpoint. Anders, happy to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Okay. And Jeff Brandis is with us. He is the former Florida State Senator and President of the Florida Policy Project. And Senator Brandis has been on the airwaves lately a lot talking about the property tax referendum. So I'm very happy to have you with us, too.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
So currently, let's begin by reviewing exactly what we can expect to see in the property tax referendum that will be on the ballot in November. You know, we've heard different versions of it. What has come out of the legislature now that we will see on the ballot? We hear that we're going to be saving money on our property taxes, but what exactly does that mean? What are we going to be voting on? Who wants to take that? Anders?
I can hop in. For over a year now, Governor Ron DeSantis has been talking about his plan to eliminate or cut back on property taxes. Now, his original proposal was a full elimination of property taxes. He pretty quickly realized that that was unworkable. You could not make that fiscal math work. So he pivoted to talking about just homestead property taxes. Now, a couple weeks ago, about 4 days before what he then proclaimed to be the special session on this property tax amendment, he finally released his plan. And that plan had a lot more questions than answers when you were looking at it. But what was actually passed by the legislature, who had to come into Tallahassee following a 3-week special session to pass a budget because they weren't able to do that on time this year, was a plan that in the first year, if it's passed, will increase the homestead property tax exemption to $150,000. That would rise to $250,000 in the second year. They did strip out two things that the governor had asked for, one of which was $5.5 million in public money to essentially campaign for this property tax amendment.
Wow.
And another was a new trust fund that he wanted to set up for the counties and the communities that are going to be impacted by this, so they could come to Tallahassee every year, essentially hat in hand, and beg the legislature to fund the essential local services that they already are that are already paid for by property taxes currently. What people should really know about this proposal is that you mentioned potentially pros and cons of this. I'm only seeing cons here. What you're talking about is going to be the largest tax shift in Florida history. People are going to end up paying more. Local services that our communities rely on, like public hospitals and health services, our first responders, disaster relief, and schools, all rely on property taxes. So if you eliminate those property taxes or you greatly increase this homestead exemption, you're going to talk about being forced to turn to private corporations for basic necessities or paying new fees to the government that jack up everyday costs. That's not real savings. There is an affordability crisis right now in the state of Florida. And what people need are real practical solutions that are going to put more money back into their pockets, not have them paying in new areas that they're not right now for services that are local, affordable, and that they rely on every single day.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I noticed, that the property tax proposal really only affects homeowners, no one else. They're the only ones that will purportedly save any money. But anybody who uses public services that are currently funded by our local municipalities are the ones most likely to either lose services or pay more for them. So it's kind of a shift of where you're paying. You know, whether it's county children's camps, county rec center gyms and fitness classes, park hiking trails and bathrooms. You know, will we have to carry piss coins like they do in Europe to pay for the use of public restrooms? Well, we probably will. Those are the kinds of things that we're going to see. And it all adds up. Senator Brandis, give me your thoughts on what
Anderson I'll take it one
said.
Step further. I think this is the largest taking of home rule we've seen in the history of Florida.
Absolutely.
Because here's the thing. Tallahassee, and the governor admits this, that this is why he had to establish this trust fund, was that he understood that he was going to bankrupt some of the counties and some of the cities in the state of Florida. And he said, well, we're just going to establish this trust fund and we'll fund it with what he called budget dust. That would ultimately fund it. But the legislature's then in this terrible position of saying, all right, what is the millage rate at that county? And do we have to move the millage rate to the maximum millage rate before we're willing to fund the trust fund? And so essentially what we're doing is we're saying your local governments can't handle it. And so the Tallahassee is going to fund it, but Tallahassee is now going to set the rules for funding your local governments. And we begin to move all of the, you know, what does your county commission do if they're really not setting their budget? They really don't have a lot of control over their county then. And if that's going to be set by Tallahassee, well, we're going to be piloting your counties by remote control.
And, you know, what concerns me is the counties are going to have to come begging to the state legislature, to the administration that's in power.
Correct.
For money, right?
It all becomes political.
Right. It all becomes political. And it's going to be sort of like the way Trump has been using tariffs as a tool to basically get counties and cities to do what they want them to do or not to do. I mean, I see opportunities for DeSantis and Uttmeyer or whoever takes their place to use their control of the purse strings to extort concessions from cities and counties. They'll try to use funding as a cudgel against municipalities' priorities and the policies that they do or do not like.
Well, and I think, and Andrew's kind of discussed this a little bit, but there are scenarios where people end up paying more under this.
Oh, sure.
Right? Because what counties and cities are going to do is shift their fire and their police to what they call non-ad valorem taxes, which is a per parcel tax, essentially. And those are not subject to any exemptions. So if you're a long-term homeowner and you have a homestead exemption, well, those aren't subject to them. They're done on a parcel-by-parcels basis. And ultimately, this is going to look like your tax bill is going to start looking like a Spirit Airlines bill.
Where
everything is individually broken out.
Right.
And that's traditionally not what people have seen before, right? They get this large kind of, you know, this is what your ad valorem tax bill is. But now you're going to see all these individual fees, and the individual fees are not going to be subject to any exemptions. And so there are scenarios where sometime long-term home owner, a disabled, somebody who's 100% disabled, could find that their tax bill went up under this scenario.
Yeah, because right now for our property taxes, we get roads, parks, schools, police, fire, recreation. We get pretty good value, and we have our Save Our Homes rule, right? That limits how much of an annual increase in property taxes the county can impose on how long, based on how long you've owned your home. That we won't, you know, that won't work anymore if there's no restrictions, if you shift to
a non-ad valorem tax fee system, right? That's the problem. And this is where nobody's really talking about this. But once the budget's signed, the sheriffs, the fire chiefs, they're all going to start coming out and they're going to start telling their county, hey, we need to shift these funds to non-ad valorem. And then all hell breaks loose because people will start seeing what this is going to do to their tax bill. And they're going to freak out. And this is everything's waiting for the budget to be signed here before they make that move.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed too, if I could hop in,
yes,
you know, this will apply to homesteaded properties. People who are really going to see a huge increase in what they're paying if this were to pass are renters as well.
The renters get really hammered here.
Yeah, the renters are gonna have to pick up the slack essentially.
Well,
right?
The renters get hit twice, right? Because they get no exemption. And if a county raises its sales tax or raises other fees or raises its gas tax, the renters have to pay that.
Right.
So there's literally no upside for anybody renting in the state of Florida to vote for this because it's just going to show up in their rent as higher rent, and they're going to end up paying higher other taxes too.
And
Senator Brandis also, he just mentioned this constitutional offices like sheriffs. As a sign of just how rushed this proposal was from the governor, it did not actually protect funding for those local constitutional offices in the initial proposal. Things like your local tax appraisers or your property appraisers, your tax collectors, supervisors of elections, those were not protected. The legislature had to come in and file an amendment to protect those offices. But outside of that, though, constitutional offices are not things like your fire departments, like your EMTs, like your local emergency response. We had hurricane season start on June 1st in the state of Florida. And over the past year, the governor has drained what's called the state's Emergency Preparedness and Response Fund on $1 million a day boondoggle for this makeshift detention camp that he's put in place down in the Everglades. So now local communities, this funding is not going to be there in a time of need for Floridians after a natural disaster strikes. A spokesperson for Seminole County stated that 31% of their property tax revenues currently fund their fire and emergency response. Now, imagine there is a big storm that hits your local community and no one's there to clear the debris. No one's there to get the roads up and running. You have to go beg to Tallahassee for any dollars that you need in a time after a disaster strikes. And it's not only hurricanes in Florida. We're in a generational drought right now. There are wildfires burning across the state. There was an earthquake off the coast of Cuba this week that was felt in the state of Florida. It's not a matter of if, but when a natural disaster will strike for Floridians. And that funding that they rely on for that local emergency response just isn't going to be there moving forward.
Yeah, that's a danger. And, you know, nothing will stop the county from switching to this fee-based system that you've been talking about, and for all of the amenities. And as you said, you get no discounts. There's no annual cap on increases, like the homestead exemption that you get from paying property taxes. And the next thing you know, your annual expenses are higher than they were before.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, look, what the governor's done is he talks about the state generally, but the state reps and the state senators did not see what had happened to their communities specifically. And this is the biggest failure of the legislature over the last few years is to the legislature loves to say, well, we need more data before we make a decision. Ultimately here, they had no data specifically on their individual cities and counties, other than their county commissioners and city council saying, don't do this. But what's going to roll out over the next 2 weeks is the specific data for their cities and counties. And that's where the real problems start. So we can look at just a couple of examples, right? So let's start with the smallest county in the state of Florida, which is Liberty County, 8,000 residents, average home value between $200,000 and $220,000, right? Effectively, this wipes out that entire base of homesteaded properties, right? So now they're fully on life support. And this is where we're going to start hearing conversations about consolidating cities, consolidating counties. But the problem is the counties that have the revenue, they need it. And they don't want to bring on another 8,000 residents that's just all cost to them and no benefit.
Right.
So there's that provision. And then you have heavily homesteaded counties like Volusia, which is 72% homesteaded, or Sumter, which is closer to us, which is 65% homesteaded. Now, all of a sudden, those counties are struggling to figure out how to make their budgets meet. So while the governor said, hey, we're going to establish this trust fund, which the legislature then said we're going to take it out of the bill, there ultimately is going to have to be a mechanism for that. But when you start looking at these individual examples of small counties, and there's dozens of small counties that are very rural, where low tax base, and this effectively wipes out their entire homestead. And then you have your heavily homesteaded counties, which are your bedroom communities that are going to get under pressure here as well. Now, all of a sudden, you leave these county commissioners with no choice. They have no options here other than what taxes are we going to raise? And then the governor doesn't want to address this point of what taxes he's going to allow counties and cities to raise, because frankly, this governor doesn't have to eat his own cooking.
Yeah.
He's going to be out in January.
Right.
This thing doesn't go into effect until January. So he's going to be like, sayonara, you guys figure it out. Meanwhile, he leaves the next governor with a burning dumpster fire of issues, of consolidations, of counties coming begging to Tallahassee, of people getting their tax shift, and now all of a sudden their bills are going up. Listen, there's a famous road paved with good intentions, and we are currently on it.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think this legislation is a stunt basically to distract us from the complete failure of the legislature to do anything to lower your property insurance bills? Because property insurance has seen far greater increases than your mm-hmm. property taxes.
Well, the failure of the legislature was between 2018 and 2022 on the property insurance side. Since 2022, things have gotten much better in Florida, and rates are starting to come down. Understand, we had three hurricanes in 2024. We had zero in 2025. Much more of your property insurance is actually based off of what happens in Bermuda and London in reinsurance costs, because about 40 to 50 cents of every dollar that you spend in property insurance, we just send offshore to Bermuda and London to pay for reinsurance for major storms. And so the property insurance rates are coming down. I would expect a 10 to 15% reduction this year. And if there's no storms this year, because it's El Nino year, then they can come down lower next year. There is, you've also had another, I think 20 companies, or not 20, but like 15 companies enter the marketplace. And think about this, Citizens in 2022 had 1.4 million policyholders. Today, it has less than 250,000 policyholders. So we've seen the sea change, and that's because private industry's coming in, that market's gotten much more competitive, and it's gonna get better. But the property tax piece, there is so much unintended fallout. Let me give you just one other example of the unintended fallout. Typically, a starter home, let's say, costs $250,000 to $300,000, and you can find them around the state of Florida. You may not be able to find them here in downtown Tampa, but you can find them around the state. Probably 50 counties have homes for sale in that $250,000. What is the incentive for a county to allow $250,000 homes, because for them, it's all costs, right? They get no revenue from that home anymore. They have to provide services to that home. They have to provide sewer. They have to provide water. They have to provide law enforcement. Where's the revenue source coming from that house? No. What do they shift to? They shift to apartments. Why do they shift to apartments? Because there's revenue coming from apartments, because apartments are non-homesteaded. Mm-hmm. So you begin to shift the way cities and counties think. And so people are saying, well, no, of course they would never do that. They would never not allow a community to build what they need. Absolutely they would.
Wow.
They would begin to shift that, because why would you allow these a 200 unit community to be built that is all money coming out that you don't have, that you don't get no money coming in from.
Wow.
And Shelley, I would tend to agree with you, and I'm going to have to disagree a little bit with the senator here. I do think this is a stunt, and it is an attempt to distract from their failures on property insurance here in the state of Florida. The senator, mentioned that rates are stabilizing, potentially coming down. You know, for Floridians right now, depending on what numbers you look at, we're paying 3 to 5 times the national average when it comes to property insurance. Property insurance rates from 2021 to now have increased more than 100% statewide, according to a new report that was in the Miami Herald last week. There was a Mason-Dixon poll, a public poll that was released in January, where it asked Floridians head-to-head, what would you rather have, property insurance relief or property tax relief? 63% of Floridians said property insurance relief. Mm-hmm. The people of our state know who's reaching into their pocket right now and taking out more than they deserve every month. And it's not the local communities for services they rely on. It's these property insurance corporations that have been jacking up rates, that have now gotten reforms from the legislature that make it almost impossible to sue them after you make a legitimate claim that they have denied. More than half of claims in the state of Florida last year were denied outright by property insurance companies. And they are doing that because they know there's not the ability of Floridians at this point to come get the money that they are owed, that they have paid for. What you're seeing from the legislature is their only solutions to the affordability crisis is to take away local services that people rely on and to jack up their fees in other areas. It's not to actually address the huge cost driver for people in the state when it comes to housing. We talked about renters earlier. Renters are paying more because of property insurance rates in the state of Florida. More people in the state of Florida right now are going what's called going bare. They are paying off their mortgage and then just praying that nothing happens, that no storm strikes, that they do not have coverage for anymore, because they can't afford $12,000 to $24,000 a year in property insurance premiums. That's where the failure from the legislature has been. And that's what really needs to be addressed, not taking away services and shifting costs onto people at a time that they are already struggling to make ends meet.
And yep. Making cities and counties engage in sort of a beggar thy neighbor situation, going, hat in hand to the legislature for whatever they need. I am very concerned also about this issue of what I see as preemption or losing more home rule.
Well, it's a takeover.
Yeah, it's a takeover, and we've seen the way that Trump has used tariffs, and we know how this would play out. This would be used as an opportunity to force cities and counties to do what they want or not do what they don't want. I mean, everything from big things to small things, like, don't paint rainbows on your sidewalks kind of thing. I mean, everything from cultural issues to public amenities.
Well, I think then it comes to like, all right, you want to hire 10, the numbers say you need to hire 10 police officers, but you can only afford 5. Right now, you got to go beg the legislature for the other 5. Now, do they have to fund those other 5, or can they only fund 2? These are the types of questions that we have to begin to think about that historically we've never done. Historically, you were taxed locally, and the money was spent locally. Now we're talking about setting up some pool of unknown, where we don't know what we're taxing in order to put money into this pool of a trust fund, which is ultimately going to have to be created. But now we're taxing from
and
other...
And who's going to control it?
Well, Tallahassee controls it.
No. But who? Literally, people. Who? Who are these people that are going to be the trustees of this trust fund? They're going to be appointed by the governor?
Yeah,
they're
going to
be, of course,
we don't,
you know,
we
his
don't know,
people?
But there's ultimately going to have
but
to be something.
But it's a danger that we don't
terrible.
Know, and they have no accountability to me.
Well,
I pay my $15,000 worth of property tax. Those people are not accountable to me.
It's just the most radical shift that we've seen in the last 100 years of control, because we're essentially moving local control to Tallahassee. because most of a lot of these small counties will not be able to fund their budgets, and they will have to go to Tallahassee. Tallahassee will then set their what their millage rate is. It will set who controls and what they can spend it on. And it kind of violates this local government, state government contract that we've had, which is dollars generated locally or spent locally. And that's the been the overall contract. Now we're kind of going to, okay, well, we're setting what dollars you can raise locally. Oh, and we're going to take some money from, you know, Miami and Orange County and Tampa Bay and put it in this pot and then sprinkle it out. But only if you, we're only going to sprinkle it to you if you follow the rules that we set
right.
from Tallahassee, and we fund the things that we want to fund from Tallahassee, and we can tell you no, what we're not going to fund.
Right. And
we've talked a lot about the impact this is going to have on local communities. But if you go to this trust fund sort of aspect they've tried to set up here or considering setting up, this could potentially bankrupt the state of Florida in the long run as well. You know, like the senator mentioned, we don't actually have hard numbers on this. The Revenue Estimating Conference is going to meet on Friday and are supposed to be taking a look at this bill. But some initial estimates show that this could cost counties $5 billion statewide. Right now, the state of Florida's rainy day fund is maxed out at $14.7 billion in rainy day funds that we have.
Yeah,
if you're talking about filling in a $5 billion hole next year, a $5 billion hole after that, a $5 billion hole after that, you have now essentially wiped out the state's rainy day fund. And where does that money come from moving forward? State economists already project that the state of Florida is going to be running budget deficits over the next 2 to 3 years. There's not the money there if you take away this huge funding source that local communities rely on. It's going to hurt the state in the long run as well.
Or they're going to talk about putting on a statewide sales tax or some other local, some other fee or tax that goes directly to the state to manage this trust fund.
They would have to.
They don't have a choice.
They would have to. Or we'd have to have a constitutional amendment and have state income tax, you know? I mean, they have to get money.
They won't do that, but they will find other ways to bring money in. They won't go with state income tax.
All right. Well, you are listening to Midpoint on WMNF Radio 88.5 in West Central Florida, and we are talking today about the property tax ballot question that you will be seeing on your ballot in November. It's absolutely critical that you educate yourself about this referendum. I've got two very, very well-prepared guests on this topic here with us today, and I hope you're listening. Senator Jeff Brandis is with us, former Florida State Senator Jeff Brandis, who's now president of the Florida Policy Project, is here with us talking about this property tax amendment. And Anders Croy from Florida Watch, a public accountability project in Tallahassee, is with us. If you've got some questions or comments about this property tax referendum, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. I know I haven't given out the call-in number too much because we have been so engaged in this conversation and in the information that Senator Brandis and Anders Croy have been giving us, but I'll try to fit in some comments. So if you are ready to make a comment about the property tax referendum, let us know. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. Okay. You know, you mentioned, Senator Brandis, that, or maybe it was you, Anders, that they cut out from this proposal money for campaigning to promote voting for the referendum. How many people believe that they're not going to go and find that money somewhere else like they did with Hope Florida? I'm skeptical.
So the legislature passed a law on this, but it doesn't prevent the governor and doesn't prevent the CFO and others to go out and promote it. So there will be a lot of earned media that they'll try to go generate from this, but they can't spend direct state tax dollars on this and local tax dollars on this.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I don't trust them. They weren't supposed to take our Medicare funds that were supposed to be returned.
Since then, the legislature's now passed a law that says you can't do that. Mm. Will they try to find a way around it? Sure. Will they try to find third parties to fund it? Sure. There's a thousand ways to get around these things, because you just go out and say, instead of making a political donation, I want you to fund this third party group to advertise on the property tax piece, and that's totally legal.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Hope Florida scandal, and I do think it's important for your listeners to understand what happened with that. I mean, that was $10 million in Medicaid money that was supposed to go to care for sick folks, elderly people, people, children in the state of Florida, that was then routed into political committees that were controlled by the governor's chief of staff at the time, now our current Attorney General James Uthmeyer, in order to campaign against amendments that were being put, that had been placed on the ballot by the people of Florida. I absolutely share your fear that they're going to figure out some workaround here to try to use taxpayer dollars. I mean, the governor even asking for that $5.5 million after they went back and passed this law in 2025, after everything that he and his chief of staff, now the attorney general, did in 2024, was just an egregious abuse of power and really shows the way that the governor views this legislature and the way he views his role in running the state of Florida. It's more of a dictatorship, really, that he should be able to do whatever he wants to do at any time than it is doing about what's best for the people of our state. But there is definitely a concern, and I think people need to really be watching to see how the governor is going to try to manipulate our taxpayer dollars in order to try to fund what is definitely his main priority as he tries to set up his next run for president once he leaves office.
All right. Yes. All right. We do have a couple of calls, so I'm going to bring in some of our listeners to see what they have to say. I have JB in St. Pete. JB, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to say the real action that's not getting paid as much attention to is the urgency, because it seems like they're really throwing some things up at the end of the game to see if they can get them in and then maybe hold them with the legislature. But obviously, maybe come the end of this year, some of the people that are in power won't be in the same position. I just wanted to say that that appears to me like just the way it looks.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Thank you, JB. Senator?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think this is simply the largest failure of legislative leadership that I've seen in my tenure in watching Florida politics. The legislature kind of found itself in a position where they passed the budget. They had the governor has the veto pen now, and then the governor immediately puts out this property tax amendment. And all the legislature really had to do to kind of get around this was say, listen, we're going to gavel in, gavel out on the special session. We'll come back in 2 weeks and we'll look at this. In those 2 weeks, a few things would have happened. In those 2 weeks, the budget would have been signed because the governor has a statutory time frame to sign the budget. In two, we would have been outside of qualifying, so we couldn't have run somebody against somebody as well, right? Because that was the other fear, that the governor might put somebody in somebody's races. But if they had just done that, then in that 2 weeks, your cities and counties could have done the math. We could have begun to thought through some of the collateral consequences of this. And then elected officials would have been able to think specifically about their communities, not generally about what's going on overall in the state of Florida, where Miami-Dade and Broward and Tampa Bay skews the numbers for the state. Had they done that, we would be in a radically different position. And I don't think half of these legislators that voted for it would have voted for it in 2 weeks that they voted for it. Under the gun that they felt like they were at. And legislative leadership should have protected them. They failed to do that. This was a huge failure by the Speaker and the Senate President.
And the governor first started talking about this in March of 2025. And Senator, I believe you called it a bumper sticker policy proposal at one point or another throughout this process. But, he has had 15, 16 months now to come up with a real proposal to look and run the numbers, figure something out, allow time for debate. The fact that he asked for a special session that was only going to run 3 days, they only actually were here for 2 days, just shows that this is not really about good public policy. It's about putting forward something that the governor thinks will be a part of his legacy as he tries to set up his own political stance in the future here. It's not about doing what's best for the people of our state and not looking at the unintended consequences of this policy overall.
I agree. Look, they could have absolutely run the numbers. They know the city's county's tax rolls from last year. They know what they're going to be this year. They could have run the numbers. They could have provided members an individual county by county, city by city evaluation of what's going to happen to their cities and counties. They failed to do that. And they did that the obscurity was the point, right? As long as they're talking about statewide numbers, it's marketing. Mm-hmm. When they start talking about specific numbers, all right, then the whole game changes for elected officials. But the obscurity was the point. The speed was the point. They had to get this through before these elected officials at the county and city, at the state level, state senators and state reps actually figured out what was going on with their local communities. Because if they figured that out, they wouldn't vote for it. And so that's why this push to get everything done in 24 hours was so, I mean, that's warp speed for the Florida legislature.
Yeah. Who is going to pick up the responsibility, besides us, on this show today, who is going to pick up the responsibility of explaining to the electorate just how bad a proposal this is?
And wait till the budget's signed. And once the budget's signed, what you're going to start seeing is cities, and because everybody's kind of holding back until they figure out what's actually in the budget, what's out, what's in and what's out, until the veto pen is put down. But once that's done, you're going to start seeing the sheriffs come out, and you're going to start seeing the fire chiefs come out, and you're going to start seeing your local public officials coming out and saying, here's the cascading series of consequences, here's how we're going to solve for it, here's the special tasking districts we're going to create, here's where the ad valorem shift goes to. All of those conversations are on pause until the budget's signed. Once the budget's signed, there will be a floodgate that opens.
I don't
of those
know.
Conversations.
I don't know. I've been thinking about this, right? I mean, yes, you're right. The sheriffs, but you know, we are going into an election season, and there are people running for election who don't want to come out and say, I'm against lowering your property taxes, even though with all of these consequences.
Hey, look, I think what's happening is these state reps and these state senators are going back home. I spent 30 minutes on the phone on the drive over here with a state rep, having a conversation with a state rep who had buyer's remorse, who said, what did we do? And we talked about it for 30 minutes, and we talked about the collateral consequences of this action for 30 minutes. And we're, you know, thinking, you know, I think you're going to see state reps and state senators come out and say, I voted to allow you to have this, have the right to vote for this, but I'm voting against it. And here's why.
And there are so many things that we're still trying to figure out what's going to be impacted here. We know that things, you mentioned special taxing districts, you know, hospital districts, South Florida, Jackson Health in Miami-Dade County, a lot of that money for Jackson Health comes from property taxes. But you're also talking about things that people aren't really fully grasping and thinking about yet. Things like local animal shelters, mosquito control,
right.
Your children's services councils throughout the state. These are all things that are going to take a real hit. And I think people are just trying to figure out what those numbers are so that they can properly educate the voters on what the real choice in front of them will be.
Well, and you have Mike Fasano, even in Pasco County, coming out. You know, he's the tax collector up there saying, listen, I'm really concerned about the bonds of these counties. So a lot of these cities and counties have bonded future revenue from their property taxes.
Good point.
And that's going to come into play here. And they may have to raise millage just to pay off their bonds, right? Because they're not going to default, but they're going to have to raise some taxes to pay for their bonds. So this is what the collateral things that people just haven't thought through is what happens to my borrowing cost if my credit rating goes down because of this for my city or my county? What happens to these bonds that are outstanding that now we have to raise taxes in order to pay? This is what we're just beginning to think through is the second order effects. What is the fallout from this decision? And the governor won't talk about it, and the legislature hadn't thought about it. But had they waited just 2 weeks, a lot of these things would have come out in the wash.
But, you know,
another thing too, you can certainly debate whether or not it's good public policy to spend tax dollars on things like sports stadiums. But I read a report this morning that in Tampa now, Hillsborough County is pushing back the vote on potentially giving money for the Rays stadium because they're not sure how this is going to affect them in the future.
Right.
Those future obligations that local communities want to put money towards, want to put funding towards, there are going to have to be some real conversations about whether or not they can do that in the future because of what the senator and what tax collector Fasano mentioned with bond ratings and the ability of these local communities to make good on those future obligations that they've put themselves towards.
You know, I mean, I respect everything that you all are saying about the true facts and what you mentioned, Senator, as the fallout of this proposal. But I am just very skeptical that these people running for county commissions all around the state, for example, are going to be able to come out and say, I'm against lowering your property taxes. Even when they talk about
they'll
all
say,
these
they'll say,
reasons.
I'm against shifting your property taxes. Because it's a shift. It's not a tax cut.
This is
shifting to some other revenue source, some other non-ad valorem taxes. And once they start showing people the bills, which is what, you know, there's a county commissioner who came out of St. John's County and he kind of ran the bills for people. He says, listen, you know, this is going to basically wipe out all of the discretionary money we have left. We have $32 million now to just run all of the other government services because $250 million of it is going to police and firefighters. and we have essentially very little budget to run your parks, your libraries, our planning boards, all of these other things, the fund the roads, the 1,000 miles of roads that they have in St. John's County to do the repairs. So the math doesn't work. The math isn't mathing for this. And this is why it's going to shift someplace else. Anybody who tells you it's not going to shift someplace else is just lying to you straight up. This is absolutely going to be a tax shift. It's not a tax cut. And county commissioners can absolutely talk about that.
Well, and I do agree with the senator, too, that the pushback is going to be bipartisan here. We're already seeing County Commissioner Cruz down in Manatee County, who is a very conservative Republican, has written a Substack, has been out in his local media talking about the impact of this tax shift on his local community and what it means for them and their citizens down there. So I do think that you're going to see people from both sides of the aisle really talking about what the actual impacts will be and what the new costs, the new fees, the new taxes that people are going to pay, as well as the lost services that may be come as a result of all of this anyway.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of people saying Florida's shifting from the free state of Florida to the fee state of Florida.
Ah, there's a good campaign.
And that's
slogan.
It's already starting.
That's a good campaign slogan. I hope they're listening. I hope all of these elected officials who are running are listening to this, because it's critical. It's really the future of Florida, I really think. It's the future of Florida. And again, I feel that this has an opportunity for the state administration to extort certain conduct or concessions, to reward loyalists, to punish dissenters. I mean, that's a scary thought. I mean, DeSantis and his minions have made no secret, for example, that they don't like the Hillsborough County award-winning health care plan, as one example. If the county can't self-fund it with adequate property tax revenue, what happens to it if it requires state funding? You know, bye-bye, health care.
Look, I mean, so let me start by saying, let me kind of round this out by saying this. I think there does need to be things done on the property tax side. I think there needs to be a thoughtful, educated conversation about how we address property taxes in the state of Florida, because I do think we have some perverse incentives that come out of the current property tax system that we could address and make it more fair, make it more equitable, make it work better for everybody. We just didn't do that. Right. There wasn't thoughtful leadership put into this proposal.
Well, not only that, but they sent Blazing Goglia out with his mini doge to the counties to look for fraud and waste.
That's part of the marketing plan.
Right. It's part of the marketing plan. Exactly right.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't think they found any, but they sure talked about it a lot.
Well, I'm sure. Listen, there is fraud, waste, and abuse in every government at every level.
Mm.
Every government, every level has fraud, waste, and abuse. And we should be honest and recognize that. And we should cut that out wherever we can. But it isn't 50% of these counties' budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to be honest about that, too. So the simple truth is there is ways that we can do this that make it more fair, more equitable. Even if they had done simple things like just adjust the current homestead exemption for inflation, that would have been simple, straightforward. But I think one of the biggest failures the legislature made was they didn't put a sunset on this. They could have said, all right, we're going to do this without numbers, but we're going to come back in 3 or 5 years and look and see what the results were. They had the opportunity. People had filed those amendments to do that. They chose not to do that. That was another failure of the legislature, because they set us down on this unknown path with no way to turn around. Had they put a sunset in, we could have evaluated. We could have seen, is it working? Is it not? What are the unintended consequences? Let's come back and fix those. Those were all available to them, and they chose actively not to do it. Again, this is legislative leadership failure at the highest level. The governor's going to do what he's going to do. The House and Senate leadership is there to protect their members from making stupid decisions. And ultimately, this was not a citizen-led amendment. This is a legislative-led amendment. And the legislature has the responsibility of putting things on the ballot that have been thoroughly vetted, that have been worked through, that we've modeled, that we understand the scenarios. What happens if home values drop another 20%? What happens, in some of these scenarios, right? We test those things and we say, all right, we're putting to you our best thinking. This is nowhere near the legislature's best thinking. This is the legislature not thinking.
Yeah. And
I think also, if the If the CFO wants to look at protecting taxpayer dollars, I would suggest he walk across the plaza level and start asking the governor about the $1 billion in no-bid contracts that have gone towards the makeshift detention camp in the Everglades at this point, many of which went to large campaign donors. He could take a look at the state's budget every year and see the tax breaks and giveaways in the hundreds of millions, billions of dollars that go to favored corporations and industries in the state that also just happen to be large donors to legislative leadership and the governor and those who are in these statewide executive offices. There is plenty of corruption that could be looked at and could be rooted out in protecting taxpayer dollars, but that needs to start at the state level. Local communities have a direct say in their county commissioners, their city commissioners, their local governments, and how that goes. And I think that they should have the right to make those decisions moving forward. People deserve the local freedom to make the decisions that are best for them, not to have Tallahassee come in and try to tell them what's best, like they know what's going on in Manatee County, in Hillsborough County, in some of these smaller cities in these rural areas of the state of Florida.
Yeah, so really, truly, this isn't just about how much money is raised from property taxes. It's really about who controls the money that is raised. You know, they've been trying to neuter county commissions and city councils little by little for decades of Republican supermajority rule. You know, they've been preempting local governments out of existence as fast as they can. Everything from, you know, we can't have gas-powered leaf blowers, but we can't protect our tree canopy. You know, they've been doing this for a long, long decade now, and they're leaving so much more control in the hands of the state, in the hands of the Republican supermajority that we've had for so long.
I think the fascinating thing is most of the people that come to Tallahassee are from local government, right? They get elected at the local level and then they move up to Tallahassee. And I don't understand why, you know, we believe that there's some fiscal baptism that happens when you go into the legislature and all of a sudden you become this ultra conservative, right? The most of these people are Republicans or Democrats from their local electeds in their local communities that come up through the city council, through the county commission, and then go to Tallahassee. Something changes, right? Then this is where. But the mindset is, I don't understand how it shifts to these people down here at the county commission are crazy and they have no clue what they're doing. No, the local governments know much better than Tallahassee on how to handle their local cities and counties.
Right.
And to think that we're going to run these counties by remote control from Tallahassee seems just like the height of largesse in thinking about how, you know, and narcissism.
And hubris.
Really. Narcissism by the legislature.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
And most of these people run for office saying that they believe in small government. This is a big government takeover of local communities in our state.
This is a centralization of government, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what our communities need is to keep big government and these corporate elites out and leave these local decisions to local people.
Yeah, I think so. All right. That's pretty much all we have time for, my friends. And I'm so sad about that because this has been a really terrific discussion with my guests, former state senator Jeff Brandis, now president of the Florida Policy Project, and Anders Croy of Florida Watch. I thank you both for joining me today. Thank you for all of your comments on the issues that we've been discussing, particularly the property tax referendum that you all will be seeing on your ballot in November. I want to also mention that we ended our pledge drive on midpoint, just shy of our $4,000 goal. You know, we had the biggest goal, one of the biggest goals in the News and Public Affairs Department. And I think last time I checked, I was $175 away from hitting my pledge drive goal. You know, I've never not reached my pledge drive goal. So I know you will help me clear that up and clear up this blot on my record so I can leave with a clean slate. You can still donate to Midpoint online at WMNF.org and direct your contribution to MPW, Midpoint Wednesday. And if you've already donated, I really thank you from the bottom of my heart. You know, our community station is powered by the energy of our volunteers and the generosity of our donors. We have no government masters, no corporate overseers. Nobody tells us what to say or what to play. You know, we do it for you, but we can't do it without you. So we are WMNF Tampa. and we are out.
Time is really wasted. Giving up all